Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. This is episode number 232, and we're coming to you on a nice warm evening in central Kentucky. And kicking it off tonight, it is myself, Stephen Zimmer, joined by the one, the only, the vivacious, the awesome Holly Philippi, who's with me right now online. And we're going to have to wait just a little bit because the man himself, Daniel Dark, had a very important business meeting on Zoom that he had to stick with. Of course, you all know that he's doing that Gentleman Cigar project. And I might add, he posted some beautiful, beautiful pics of the new project, the new bus trolley that he's got that he's going to be taking around with his new business. He put those up on Instagram a day or two ago, and let me tell you, it looks fantastic. It looks fantastic. So he's definitely got a heck of a project coming, but yeah, he'll be joining us. He tends not to ever miss a Star Chamber show, so I know he will be on at some point tonight. And actually, he may have just come online here. All right, that may be Daniel. Okay, I see him flashing up there. I think that might be him. Is that Daniel? Maybe.
Hey guys.
Daniel.
Hey.
There he is.
Dark one.
Yes, you're good. We were just bragging about you a second ago, and your Instagram posts of your beautiful new project that you posted the other day. So, welcome back. Yeah, we're excited about that, man.
Sorry that I had to finally just leave it. I was just like, okay, they're not even slowing down, so I'm going to leave the Zoom call and get on here where I've been committed to for a little while. So,
well, we were prepared. We were figuring you'd join us when you could, and that's all right. That's all right. We know how it goes
we're glad that you're here.
Yeah, we're just glad that you're here because this is going to be such a cool show. And if you pay attention when we give shout-outs to who does our intro music, that has a lot of relevance to tonight's show. So, yes, the Dark One, Holly and myself are in for a fun night tonight, and so is our audience. Going to be a blast. So,
well, we need a blast and everything. You know, it's just one of those type of things that, you know, with everything that's going on right now, a blast, you know, to the future is where we're headed to now.
Ha! What a good segue you just brought up, because Holly and I just could get in the mood for tonight's show. We just watched a good time travel movie called Bill and Ted Face the Music, the new Bill and Ted movie that just came out. And, of course, it involves you know, the lovable characters and time travel. And, yes, they do go into the future. That's all I'll say. I'm not going to give any spoilers, folks. But I did want to say, though, however, okay, I'll be candid. It is not as strong as the first two movies. So those are in a kind of a class by their own. I think they're a little bit of a zeitgeist, kind of like spirit of the times that they came out in. But I will say the new Bill and Ted movie is, to borrow one of their favorite words, most excellent. And really loved it. It does capture this. Yes. Most excellent. And it does capture the spirit of the first two. This thing I was fearing the most, because it's been many years since those two movies, and I was a little concerned that they might try to Hollywoodize it a little bit too much and, you know, screw some things up as far as the heart and soul of that franchise. And they did a pretty good job of keeping the vibe. And I have a quote that I'm going to save for the introduction to our guest tonight. But they had a magnificent quote given by the Grim Reaper in this one, and it is. But I can't say it because I've got to honor our guest tonight with this quote. So it is too awesome.
All right.
So, but it was fun. Holly and I just, I mean, it just, like, God, it was like Time warp when we watch movies like that. Just great. Just brings back the spirit, the vibes. Keanu Reeves is just, I love the guy. I just think he's a class act. He's one of the few all-around class acts, I think, left in Hollywood, in my opinion. And, I mean, just a very good, gracious, classy guy. And you never see any crap with him. And, you know, it's really a guy that I like a lot. And Alex Winter, of course, is back, and it's just a blast to see see those two on screen again. And they bring back a lot of folks, believe it or not, from the original. I can't tell you all the surprises that you're going to see in it. I will say, I did put it on Facebook there, look for the homage to George Carlin. That kind of got me in the feels when they did that. But they do have a little homage to George Carlin, and I thought that was just really cool, the screenwriters, to get that written in there. That was awesome. So
I don't know whether you have brought it up tonight, you know, before I got on, but I would like for everyone to remember Friday.
Friday.
Yep. Friday is 9/11.
Yes.
Yes. 9/11. Yeah, you're right.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, the tragic day of the United States that we had not had happened here before. So I just want to bring that back into people's mind one more time, you know, so that we don't forget the, you know, great men and women and everybody that, you know, perished on that day.
And true. I will say it was a time we need to look back and reflect. It was a time where Americans come together. They stood together. It was not a divided country. It was a country that stood together, and we looked out for our fellow men, and there wasn't everything going on that there is right now. There were true patriots on that day.
Yeah, go ahead, Daniel.
One thing that a friend of mine said the other day in a Zoom that I really appreciated in a way, and I'm not, you know, not political or anything myself really, but he is a personal friend with Donald Trump, and, you know, not saying that he voted for him or anything like that, because he didn't vote for him, but he said Donald Trump is the best thing that's happened to America in a while, because it has made people pick a side and do something. You know, people are doing things. People are getting active. People are, you know, bringing out their feelings and stuff, which this country hasn't had happen since, you know, the World War.
All right.
You know, where
everything kind of lay dormant.
Yeah, you know, where people just, you know, went, you know, got, you know, went by because of, you know, I don't want to say anything because, you know, somebody's going to be upset with me and everything. People are saying they're picking sides and they're doing something. May not be, you know, the exact right thing to do or the wrong thing to do, but they're, you know, they're actually doing things. As a country today,
that's one way of looking at it. Yeah, I can see that.
At least they're proactive, huh? Until there's a civil war, and that's going to be a different topic.
It might be a but
we might
be
having a different discussion in 6 months.
Unfortunately,
it's
true.
Time.
But
it is crazy times, and, you know, everybody has their own little, you know, agenda and stuff like that. You know, I don't care whether whether you're political, not political, or anything. You have your own agenda, and your agenda is to make your life better.
Right.
You know, however you see that, you know, whether it's sitting on top of a mountain and you know by yourself. Or whether it's, you know, being inside of a big city and everything, and being able to do, you know, tremendous things with, you know, business, or, you know, like Stephen had an agenda several years back to bring Imaginarium to the people. And that agenda went forward. And what have we done with it? You know, even though COVID shut down Imaginarium this year, in a way, we're making it bigger and better. Holly and Stephen are making sure that we're going to have a bigger and better Imaginarium than we've ever seen before.
Yes, we're working hard on that, and along with Eric Kyer in the film side, and Cassandra Morgan and Wayne Peterson, who have been golden behind the scenes preparing for this. Definitely want to give them a correct spotlight and shout out. They've been great. So, yeah, it will be. And next week, next Wednesday, we are going to do a full preview show on Imaginarium. So you will get a full preview several days out from the start of the event, so you have plenty of time to plan for your big week at Imaginarium. There will be no official featured guest next week, but we will do a preview, and yeah, we'll get into the guts of that for sure. And our guest will be calling here.
Cool will be with us.
Yes. Oh, that for the preview. Yes, that's, you're right. You're right.
Yes.
Thank you. Sorry about that. He will be here for the preview. Yes, we will have a guest for the preview. Yes, that's right.
Yes.
I was just thinking about our normal format, though, because I do want our audience to know that it will be a preview show. Let's see. Our guest is going to be calling in just a couple minutes, so I guess we should go ahead and spotlight our sponsors for this special show. And tonight we have Marianne Pohl, a great author of Christian horror. And so if you never have explored that genre, it's a very interesting fusion of Christian fiction and horror fiction. It's really a great writer, and I'm going to give you a little bit of info on her. And then the other, of course, is the great Ren Garcia of the League of Elders series. And I almost think that Ren and I could almost be a modern-day Bill and Ted if we really wanted to. So we could probably pull it off together. But I love Ren. But we will go ahead.
In the phone booth at one time.
Right now, no. A couple of years ago, I might have been able to squeeze in. But, yeah, I'll get there, I think. Holly's been getting on me a bit, so I've slowly been recovering from this illness mess I've had this year. But Ren Garcia is awesome. And, I'll give you a little bit about Marianne Pohl, and then we'll go to Ren. So, first, Marianne Pohl. In invisible battles being fought around us, if we listen closely, we can hear swords clashing in the war for human souls. The Iconoclast thriller series is not your typical horror. So, if you're looking for blood and guts, just for the sake of blood and guts, you won't enjoy these books. But if you're looking for frightful stories in which ordinary individuals must face extraordinary circumstances and the supernatural, look no further. Available on Amazon.com, and where all good books are sold. And her Amazon address is www.author.mariannepohl.com, and she spells it MARYANNPOLL. www.author.mariannepohl.com. So, yes, thank you, Marianne. You are awesome, and we appreciate you
being one of our
regular sponsors. And now to Renicus the Mighty, onward, Ren Garcia.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Yeah,
I hope so.
We are, Ren. I think we are.
Pretty weird, Ren.
Yeah, we're pretty weird. Oh, man, too funny. Yeah, Ren is such a blast, and I hope that you all get to experience him once we get back to doing live events again, because at live events, he is a fun person to visit with. to say the least. But we're gonna have a fun person joining us here in just a few, not too long from now. Should be. I'm looking out already on the radar for tonight's guest, and it's gonna be awesome. And
Ren is almost as exciting as the Hop and Mr. Smith.
Yeah, Ren is a mysterious individual. He's a man of mystery, and he's a character. And I know that Carol Prefladish and Sandy Lender, they're in the chat room. They probably could both vouch for me on that because they've been to conventions with him. But yeah, he is somebody we definitely definitely want at all of our events because yeah, he definitely raises the positive vibes in the room for sure.
Oh yes,
yeah,
he
good
does.
Good guy. Good guy.
Yes, he does. He has. Mm-hmm. He's a lot of fun at conventions. That's for sure.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. So Daniel, real quick before we're waiting on Pete, how's the trolley coming along?
The trolley is coming along good now. I got all the tops sealed. I will find out whether what I did mattered or not in about 3 days when it starts raining Saturday. I will find out, you know, hopefully no leaks anywhere. I've still got to seal off some windows and stuff on, you know, around the frames and stuff like that. But I've got all of the outside of it painted, everything like that. I got my lights in today. They came in FedEx.
Very nice.
And
awesome.
So I've got my lights in. I've got, you know, all that stuff. And if everything is cool Saturday, I will be putting in wood next week.
Nice.
Ooh,
and,
congratulations.
And it'll you know, then I'll be able to put in my air conditioning that I've got sitting in storage right now, you know,
right.
And other things. So
awesome.
Yes, it is coming. It's coming along, and you know, I am still planning on being at least a month ahead on everything.
Oh, neat.
Good
from
deal.
What I originally gave myself on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Time, and I got my first gig last night. As soon as the trolley is ready to go and everything, a guy wants me to carry him and several other people up on a bourbon trail.
Very nice. Very nice.
Awesome.
Well, while we're on the subject of going
to the bourbon houses.
Awesome.
And while we're on the subject of bourbon and gigs and cool things, our guest is on deck. And so I'm going to make our guest listen to this introduction because I am tonight, folks. I want to give the best introduction that he has received in his entire life. So I'm going to start it off with a quote from the new Bill and Ted movie. And this is from the Grim Reaper in Face the Music. You don't just get to rock. You got to earn the right to rock. And tonight's guest has not only earned that right, he is rock incarnate, folks. He blazes the fretboards as the lead guitarist for bands such as Far Cry and Jaded Past. He is also the host of the internationally known radio podcast, Friday Night with Fry. And it's broadcast at ARFM in the UK and Philly Rock Radio in the United States. And he is also the founder of Taproom 19 in South Philadelphia, a great craft beer establishment. Tonight, folks, I am proud to bring you onto the show guitarist, songwriter, entrepreneur, and best of all, a great guy, the one, the only, Pete Fry. Welcome to the show, Pete. Your mic is live.
How do I compete with that? I'm drinking bourbon now, and you're on.
Just grab a guitar and start.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, hey, he's drinking bourbon. I've got it. I will not lie. I have a glass myself, as I tend to do on podcast night, and I am kicked back and ready to enjoy this. And we got, I don't know if you heard this, but Holly and I did watch the new Bill and Ted last night to kind of get in the headspace for tonight. So we are ready to rock.
Cool. Yeah, we watched it a couple of days ago ourselves. So it's, you know, I've been waiting for it. So it was good to finally get to see it.
Yes. Yeah, so yeah, cool. So you know where that my quote came from. You know, I wasn't. You know, I didn't just make that up.
I totally remember that.
Yeah, the scene when. Yeah. Well, I can't give away spoilers. Yeah, I don't want to give away too much to the folks that haven't seen it yet.
Steven has been
but,
so excited since then. He's like, that is the quote of quotes.
No, it's a good one. Well, and you can always count on the Bill and Ted franchise to have good quotes for rock and roll. So,
oh, that's true.
And I think it gets the younger audience into some of the classic hard rock that you and I love so much. I think it does some good for the generations, because it's fun to see younger folks get into hard rock and metal from, you know, the earlier eras, you know, as well as today, of course. But yeah, it's good stuff. Good stuff. And I think Ron Keel will probably like that Grim Reaper quote too. You've got to earn the right to rock. I bet you he has to do some kind of promotion around that at some point. But, yeah, of course, folks, Keel, if you haven't checked the band Keel out, please do, because they are awesome. And they actually have an album called The Right to Rock. So, but, yeah,
yeah,
Pete, it is.
Either, I was going to say, yeah, he's either happy with it or he's calling his lawyers. So.
Oh. Oh, man. Well, it's good.
Steven, I've got a statement. I've got something for you. Some of the people that I'm working with right now.
Oh God!
This is something I just thought about, because we're talking about rock and roll, you know, and I know that you have an affinity toward a certain group.
Yeah, just a wee bit, probably. If it's what I'm thinking of.
And a few of the people that I've been working with here recently are friends with this guy by the name of Gene.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh,
no,
boy.
Personally,
oh, boy.
And, you know, he comes out to their houses and stuff, you know, so.
Well, you need to get Gene Simmons to make an appearance on Friday Night with Fry. Get him on Pete's podcast. That would be epic. I mean,
man.
I know Jerry Hummel would probably have a, you know, he'd probably pass out from excitement.
Would you rather have him on Friday Night with Fry or on, you know, Star Chamber?
Well, of course we can do a Star Chamber and talk business stuff, but Pete has the, you know, he has an international rock show. I mean, there's no more perfect fit. I mean, for sure.
Yeah.
'Cause I know every Friday we look forward to it, Pete. We Holly and I usually work in the office. Sometimes we don't get to comment on the thread. You got a great active thread in the Facebook group, but it's just like, yeah, it's glorious. I mean, every week, and you always cost me money, Pete, every week. I mean, I swear I've ordered, and Holly gets mad sometimes, but I end up ordering like new CDs after listening to your show, and I can't really afford them sometimes.
I was going to say, if you love melodic hard rock, Friday Night
with Fry.
Like Scott Joplin and stuff, or?
He plays everything from classic. He's had Jefferson Starship all the way up to, you know, stuff that's just been released last week. I mean, Pete covers it all, and the group is awesome.
Like,
I mean, I'll give a shout out. Because I know Pete loves all the folks that listen to the show: Brad Davidson, Jerry Hummel, Tim Swift, Jane Arendenko, Susan Wong Downs, Tasha Buckingham. I mean, yeah, he's got such a great group of fans in that. And yeah, Pete, you can tell them they got shout outs now on the show tonight. So. I'm hoping they're listening, but man, yeah, it's like a Friday ritual for us, Pete. You've definitely been part of our life and definitely a badly needed bright spot in this COVID infested year. It's
yeah.
like every yeah, right. And man, so I'm out first, but definitely I want to start maybe with the music, because you are known, of course, most as the, you know, the amazing lead guitar player, you know, and, you know, been a recording artist, performer, and, you know, Far Cry has a new album coming up soon. I mean, yeah, tell us the latest on the new album and where it's at and what we can look forward to with that.
Yeah, I've got, it seems like every day I've got more music going on in my life, and obviously Far Cry has been the main band in my repertoire for the last, I guess since about 2006, 2007 when we formed the band originally. But we do have a new album. It's fully mastered. The cover art is done. It's all ready to go. We're talking to a number of different labels. We're trying to find the right fit for us. You know, obviously nobody wants to pay for art these days, but we're trying to make it so that we're not losing too much money. And, you know, we mm-hmm. want to find a label that really believes in what we're doing and hopefully can get us out there on some festival bills. So that's, mm-hmm. that's always a challenge, but that's what we're doing. But in addition to that, I'm still working with Jaded Past and George Becker. I'm in another band in PA called Hit and Run, and we're working on an EP as well, which is at some really great sound and stuff. In fact, Jaded Past is also doing a live album soon. And then I just recently started working. I got asked to do some lead guitar work on a new project called Blonde Viper out of South Dakota. So that's something you look for. The first single is already out. It's pretty straight up rock and roll, kind of 70s style almost, you know, kind of like AC/DC meets Queen. It's
cool.
It's fun stuff. And, you know, they just asked me if I'd play guitar, and they sent me essentially finished tracks and asked me to, you know, play some guitar on it. I was like, absolutely. Let's do it. And then even further than that, I started, I've been writing a lot of material on my own, and I started wanting to put that out and, you know, get some of that recorded, because sometimes I write stuff that just doesn't fit with anything that I, you know, any project or band that I'm playing with. So I started mm-hmm. working on some of that. So I got way too many things going on all at once. So we'll see what happens.
Nice. Well, hey, that's all right, because as a writer, I get it, because I sometimes have multiple projects brewing at the same time and in different genres. So I, you know, on some levels, I get that. And, you know, but yeah, you're very prolific as a player, songwriter, and you've done some really cool stuff too, like with Jaded Past. I mean, one of the, before this whole pandemic mess hit, you did that one show where you guys kicked off the Kiss Cruise, and that was awesome. I mean, yeah, when I saw you did that show, I mean, how cool is that? And see, Daniel, so Gene may have heard or seen Pete somehow, because they did the show down there. But it's you've done some really amazing stuff, and unfortunately, you know, it's one negative thing, I guess. But you did have a tour lined up for Europe when the pandemic hit, opening for Bonfire, I believe, and so that was you definitely we felt the impact of live events getting canceled. Of course, we had to transfer our whole convention to a virtual format, but I know you've also been impacted by, you know, live shows being shut down essentially. So, I'm guessing that's enabled you to work more on recording and writing, or, has that been, you know, have you been, has that helped time-wise, or, you know, because some people, they've been impacted negatively a little bit creatively with all the kind of, you know, the shutdown stuff.
You know, it's an interesting question. It's weird that you ask that, because I'm usually on the other end of that question, because I ask a lot of the people I interview for the Friday mm-hmm. show that same question. I'm like, so has it been good? What's good? What's bad? You know, and I'll tell you. Right out of the gate, the first thing that happened was, you know, after a couple weeks of like, wow, this sucks. Hey, it's not over yet. Because, you know, everybody was talking like 2 weeks at the time, which obviously didn't materialize. But I got, technically, I got much better at playing guitar because I was playing all the time. And I was doing, you know, I was doing some recording that I needed to do. And I was just sitting down and just playing a lot. And I got really good. But the creativity, it was just such a blanket of blah on me, you mm-hmm. know, and it really, it took me, it wasn't until like, I guess a couple months ago, you know, maybe like July, where I really started ramping up the creativity and just kind of getting used to the new normal for now until it changes to something else. But I'm like, I can't stop doing music. I don't know how long I'm going to be around, you know, I mean, you know,
well, you better be around for a while. You better, because I want to have a whole collection of Pete Fry vinyl one day, and I'm on a mission to get you. We got to get you a Dino Jelusic. I hope I pronounced that right. Lead singer of Animal Drive. It's like a fusion of Jorn Landy and Ray Gillen, in my opinion. I mean, it's like you combine those two voices, and that's what you get. But we got to get you on a project with that guy at some point. that's a future mission too.
The real challenge there would be is that he's a Frontiers artist, so not welcomed me or any of my projects within their walls. It just doesn't seem to be like something they're interested in, which is, you know, it is what it is. You know,
well, I'm going to have to go over to Italy and give them heck for that, because they do have some good projects on their roster, that's for sure. But they need to catch on and get with the times and get Pete Fry, man. That's the thing. But
speaking of fusion, though, have you thought about, you know, fusing any types of different genre of musics together to create a total new sound?
You know, I've never been that guy. I've always, you know, it's pretty much anytime I sit down to write something, and sometimes I'll even write, and I'm like, ooh, this has kind of a modern sound or a folky sound. And then by the time I'm done with it, it's yet another hard rock song. Because that's just where I go. And I do, you know, I do some interesting things. I've played mandolin on a track recently. I've never played the mandolin in my life, but I heard something in my head. So I went out and bought a mandolin and played it on a track. Cool. And you'll be hearing that at some point.
You just bought a mandolin and played it, huh?
Yep.
He's that good.
Somebody's got to do it, right?
So how many instruments do you actually play?
Oh, I've never asked them that.
For the most part, I'm really a guitar player, but, you know, I know the notes on a keyboard. I can doodle around on a mandolin. I mean, it's all notes. So once you know where they are and what the tunings are, you can kind of go from there and make things happen. I mean, I program my own drums. I play bass on my demos. But I don't feel like I do any of those things well enough to be final product. So I just get it out there to the people who are going to do it and let them kind of run with it, you know, hopefully using what I've given them as a springboard. But, you know, I pretty much stick to guitar and I do love singing. The more I get, the more I play live and the more I play with other bands, the more I've been getting into singing backing vocals, which I used to like. Not that I ever hated doing it, but I always felt like, wow, I'd really rather just be standing up here playing guitar. But now that I do it more and more, I don't even think about it. And I love singing harmony. I just love it. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to join a barbershop quartet next? Is that?
Yeah, either that or Drake and Chance. One of the two. I'm not sure yet. So.
Oh, I want both. I'll buy copies of both. Oh my God, that would be classic. Especially after known you for a few years now. Yeah, you and I go back about to 2010-ish, I think. So yeah, now.
Yeah.
But it's as far as the you know, you're talking about playing and at home and writing and things like that. But, you know, in the COVID era, obviously, people aren't getting together in person quite as much. That I wanted to see, did that affect the recording process for you, like with the current Far Cry album, with other recording things? And, you know, today's world, you know, often, you know, things are recorded remotely by different musicians and then brought together. Could you give us a picture on the recording process you guys have been using, and, you know, were there any adjustments that you had to make this year around that?
Yeah, absolutely. I can talk about that. I've actually been recording guitar on my own for several years right now. In fact, all of the lead guitar on both Far Cry albums was done in my home studio. So I'm pretty familiar with that, and I've gotten better at it to the point where now I can, where I used to be able to just deliver a file, and then the producer would have to take over and give it a sound and kind of craft a tone for me, because I just didn't have the capability at the time. I do a lot of that myself. I'm a lot more familiar with it. We had actually already recorded drums and vocals prior to the pandemic, so we had just finished it. Probably, I guess we finished technically recording in like maybe February, early March. I mean, it was really close to all this hitting. So we just finally put the finishing touches on it. With Jaded Past, we've been starting to go back in the studio. So we did the live stream event where all of us were together in the same room. I think everybody is kind of expanding their circles a little bit. And for wrong, right, or indifferent, I can't stay locked in my house forever, but I will take the appropriate precautions when I'm out, you know. Not so much because I'm scared that I'm going to get it and die. I don't want to give it to anyone else. So I do what I need to do. I don't complain about it. It is what it is. You know, it doesn't.
You're
really
just being respectful for everybody else.
That's
exactly.
Well, being that both Holly and I have actually had it, we appreciate that feedback.
We appreciate that, actually.
Yeah. That was no fun. Our March and April were definitely ruined by that bout. But
I'm so glad you guys got through it.
We're glad we got through it as well. but that was definitely an odyssey for sure. But I was curious about how your recording process may or may not have been affected. And, you know, I do know that, you know, bands, you know, nowadays record remotely and, you know, send tracks to each other for, you know, mixing and whatnot. So yeah, it's one good thing about, I guess, the technology and where the internet is at right now, is that you can do, you know, live video conferencing and, you know, send, you know, large data files easily. And, you know, and definitely people, you know, as you know, I mean, the power of software now is so much greater, you know, than even, you know, a decade or more ago. And there's so much you can do now. And in terms of, you know, not having to spend a fortune out of the pocket, you can make great productions on a lower budget now. And that is a positive, I guess, for the more independent musician, I'd have to say. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's, you know, like with everything else, there's ups and downs about that. I mean, the up is obviously that, you know, it's a lot easier for people like me to sit at home and record your guitar tracks, send them wherever. We just sent our whole album out for mastering, you know, like a couple months ago, and, you know, got it back in a couple weeks from the guy, you know. So it's really great to be able to do that. The downside is that everybody can do it and not everybody should. So there's a lot more product out there, and some of it just maybe shouldn't have been released.
Mm-hmm. Those books like that too. We understand that.
Yeah, trust me, the book industry is affected by that mightily. We know.
A lot of people need editors.
It gets rough.
For the young, exactly, you know, musicians out there that are trying to record stuff, do you have a dedicated recording studio in your place, or do you set up and tear down a recording studio?
It's dedicated, but I hesitate to call it a studio per se. for me, it's more like a workstation area. It's where I record the Friday Night with Fry show. It's basically a desk and a laptop and a DAW interface, a bunch of amps, a bunch of guitars, and I don't tear it down because it's a spare room in our house. But it's enough for what I do because I don't have to record drums. I don't have a vocal booth because I don't record vocals there. So for stringed instruments and things that are going direct, it works great. It works great for recording the Friday Night with Fry show, and I don't have to tear it down. So that's a real plus. And at the core of it is my laptop, and I just, you know, so I can take it with me when I need to do other stuff, but then I can come home, plug it into, you know, my large monitor, my studio monitors, you know, all that fun stuff, and just get to work. And mm-hmm. it takes 5 minutes.
And what type of mics and stuff like that are you using?
For the guitar?
To be honest, I don't do a lot of mm-hmm. miking stuff because most of my stuff is direct. So lately I've been going direct right out of my Blackstar HT20 tube head for my guitar tracking, and I'm really liking what that gets me. It because it is a real amp. Yeah, it's going direct, but it's a real amp. You're just not there's no miking. It's just XLR right out of the back of the amp. So
sweet.
Been working really well.
For your show and everything, you're just using regular mics and stuff for that, or condenser mics?
I hesitate to tell you how I do the Friday Night with Fry show. Trade secrets.
Yes! I love it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's really a trade secret, but basically, I have a decent vocal mic that the producer we used to work with on the Far Cry albums, Ty Sims, recommended I get. It's an Audio Technica. It's a nice unit, but it wasn't super. I think it was like $150 or something. So it works really well when I do want to mic things and when I do want to do some vocals or mic a mandolin, for instance, or something like that. But when I do the Friday Night with Fry show, and I've done it this way since I started, I have a pair of straight up regular old earbuds plugged into the audio out of my laptop. And then the mic is the laptop mic. It's just that simple.
Nice.
So that's
well, yeah, sometimes they're good. I mean, the mics and laptops, I mean, if you're in a quiet room, they pick up fine.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
I mean, I got earbuds. Steven's got a headset now, but, I mean, he had earbuds.
I'm using a gamer's headset is what I'm using. So.
Yeah.
That's what Steve does.
I actually use a gamer headset. It's a higher-end one that I got for a steal, and it's really, really been nice. The mic's on laptop, so, I mean, some of them can be really good, and I've done, you know, video streams off just straight off a laptop, and it sounded, you know, fine. You know, it's obviously not pro YouTube quality necessarily, but, yeah, good enough. I mean, everybody, you know, can definitely have no trouble hearing me. But your show sounds great. One of your members of the Friday Night with Fry Facebook group, musician and author Carl Moore, is listening to the show right now. So this will some of the gang out there. Yes, and yeah, Carl's awesome. We suspect Holly and I. He looks dead on like Dave Grohl. We think he actually is. He won't tell us for sure.
Yes.
I wish he would. Because he'd like, you know, sell millions of books if he actually came out with that. He looks like Dave Grohl. Yeah, we always kid him about it. But I guarantee he's having a bourbon too. He's one of the bourbon gang too. But oh man, yeah, that is cool. I did get a message from him. Yeah, he is listening. But you don't need necessarily a million-dollar setup though to do a good you know. Thing anymore. I mean, definitely. I mean, that's one positive about the podcasting world. And you've been you've been doing it. I don't even want to speculate in how many shows you've done at this point. But you've had a pretty steady show for a while. How long has the podcast gone at this point?
I think it's been going since 2012, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Because
nice.
It's either 2011 or 2012 because I went to Firefest in the UK to play, And I went in both 2011 and 2012. And I remember talking to Steve Price, who was the program director at ARFM at the time. And I asked him how things were going. And he said, you know, we're doing all right, but we could use a few more presenters. You know, we lost a couple recently. I was like, oh, I'd do a show. Mm-hmm. And he's like, really? And I was like, yeah, sure. Why not? And then I went home and I was like, what the hell did I just say I would do? I have no idea. So I ended up buying I bought like a $50 piece of software called Nicecast that works for the Mac for podcasting and radio broadcasting. I picked that up and I use iTunes for my library because that's where I keep everything. And you know, the first few shows were a little shaky, and I can definitely feel that I've gotten a lot more comfortable with it. I don't even want to listen to those first few years worth of shows, but I'm still not like I listen to like people who do this for a living, and I'm like, wow, they're good, you know. And I'm like, man, I wish I was better like that. But you know, I'm just trying to have fun with it, and I genuinely like bringing new music to people. So it is what it is, you know.
Has Frank Basalian, is that how I pronounce it? Has he been with you since the beginning, or did he come on later? As far as because I know he tallies up the set lists from your show and posts those later on in the evening in the Facebook group.
I think he was pretty much right there from the beginning. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure because somebody had to do that, and it was never me. So
yeah,
I'm pretty sure it was him.
He's a mystery man. Because I love it because I go back and listen to the archive shows on ARFM SoundCloud and I always pull up Frank's like playlist to, you know, where I know what songs are coming up and all that. And yeah, such, yeah, I figured, yeah, he's been a part of the show for a while because I've certainly made use of his set list posts that he makes for you. But that's awesome. And yeah, folks, it is on ARFM SoundCloud. It's archived, Pete's show is. So and go back and listen to all the shows if you look through, you scroll through there. Or Mixcloud, is it? Is it ARFM Mixcloud?
It is Mixcloud,
I believe, right?
Yeah.
Mixcloud, yeah. Yeah, because I know I've got a bookmark.
This is a hard question. What is the best musical group that you've had on recently?
Oh, wow,
ooh.
Recently. You know, I've had a couple
good ones.
Really good ones lately, and I have a terrible memory. I mean, like some of the most memorable ones I've had is, you know, like Michael Schenker. I'm like, wow, you know, I can't believe I'm talking to Michael Schenker, you know, because I've been listening to Michael Schenker since like the late 70s, you know, and I've had Jeff Scott Soto. I've had Corey Clark from Warrior Soul. I'm actually wearing a Warrior Soul t-shirt right now, but I had him on.
Love Corey Clark. Love it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
He's batshit crazy, and I love him to death. It was one of the most fun interviews I ever did for the show. You know, and recently, like this week, it's Hell in the Club from Italy. Great band. Mm-hmm. Perfect Plan was last week. I've got coming up on the show, I've got Lee Pistolero, the Gypsy Pistoleros. I've got Denny Smith from Great Affairs. I've got some really good ones, and I don't play favorites as far as like, oh well, you must be at a certain level, or you know, or mm-hmm. I only do underground bands. I will take anyone that I would play on the show, you know, and that's a pretty huge gamut because over the years, I started out as much more of a straight-up melodic rock show, and I've really gotten to the point where I'm like, you know, screw it. I'm just going to play stuff that I like. And, yeah, I love a lot of melodic rock, so you're going to hear a lot. But you also might hear a thrash tune or, you know, something that's more punk or whatever, you know, just because that's, those are my influences too. So.
Oh, yes. Some of your shows recently have been kicking off with some pretty heavy stuff, but yeah, lately I've noticed you've had some pretty banging stuff. I mean, from on the heavier end of the spectrum.
Right out of the gate. I'm like,
Because I watched some interviews yet. Yeah, the guy from McQueen Street. His name escapes me, but that was. I really enjoyed that interview a lot. I remember David Reese from Accept and Bonfire. I remember you had him on at one point. And
I've had him on a couple times.
Yeah. I caught that latest one the past year, I guess. But it was man, your interviews are fantastic, and you are a really good interviewer. You really do get them comfortable, and these guys do talk. I mean, you could tell they're relaxed, and that's mm-hmm. that's an art. That's another talent of yours.
Yeah.
Well, 9 times out of 10, I'm very familiar with their music, so it makes it easy for me to get in there. And I always try and keep it conversational, because sometimes you get on, you know, like you listen to an interview, it's like, okay, question number one, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, I'm not doing that.
So. Well, I'm going to ask another question then.
I'm going to ask him a million-dollar question after you're done. Go ahead, Daniel.
This is something that any person like you and Steven and myself and others will remember or should remember. What was the first album that you went out with your own money and bought?
I know that one by heart, because I've actually answered it before. I forget when. I think somebody asked on Facebook or something a few years back, but it was actually two albums. I bought The Cars' self-titled debut and Foreigner's double.
Nice. Yes. Nice.
Yeah. So
very cool. Very cool.
Still huge influences to this day. And in fact, Jaded Past, apparently George Becker is a Cars fan, because one of the first cover songs he suggested we do was Bye Bye Love, and we do it to this day, and it's probably the best cover we do, and we do our own version of it. It's a remake. It's actually available on YouTube. If you check out Jaded Past Bye Bye Love, you can find it out there. But we just recorded it like a month or two ago, and I was really proud of it.
Cool.
But, yeah, Cars and Foreigners.
Very cool.
Influences for me.
Very cool. Very cool.
What about you, Steven?
It's my first albums.
First album that you bought with your own money.
Ooh,
I bought with my own money.
My...
God, I'm trying to think of when I actually had. Yeah, because I'm going back and thinking. Yeah, I will say just off the top, my first record ever given to me rock wise was Fleetwood Mac's Rumors. I had a huge crush at age 7 on Stevie Nicks. Age 7, I was like, Stevie Nicks is so beautiful. But then Love Gun by Kiss was the second album I was given by my parents, and that set everything in motion. That changed my life. But as far as buying, you were really getting me there, Daniel. I think the first albums that I bought were because I didn't have a whole lot of discretionary income then, and I was spending a lot of it in baseball cards. But I ended up getting my parents are really dedicated about making sure I had all of Kiss's albums. Like when they came out, they were like, hey, I know you love them. So they would get them for me. But I think that when I started getting stuff, it was around like Judas Priest Screaming for Vengeance, I think, and Motley Crue, Shout Out the Devil. Stuff like that. Those were the first albums when I was starting to like buy them. And wasn't being like gifted them by generous parents that were supporting my Kiss addiction. So I think that was it.
Yeah.
Right around there.
I actually still have mine. Steven knows this. It's in our living room with my other album.
Mm-hmm.
It's vinyl, of course, because that's telling age, but there was no cassettes yet.
That's
vinyl.
That's an album.
album. It still plays, and it's Prince Purple Rain. That was the first one, and mm-hmm. I still play it every now and then.
Still
I
plays
believe,
it, yep. I can attest to it. Yeah, she does have it still. That is awesome. That is awesome. But, yeah, it's the early part of the 80s is when I started really buying a lot of albums. Night Ranger and Judas Priest and Motley Crue, Shout Out the Devil. I mean, I was a big buying on vinyl until like about later in the 80s. So most of those were records. That's another reason I'm always bothering Pete to release stuff in vinyl, because I'm a vinyl fanatic. But yeah, that's cool. And Carl Moore actually wanted to chime in on that. He said his first album he ever bought was If You Want Blood, live album from AC/DC. He just sent me a message. And he wanted you to know, Pete, that he has a Gibson SG on the cover of his book, Slash of Crimson and Other Tales. He insisted on having a Gibson SG on the cover. So, yeah, he wanted you to know that, Pete.
Nice. I bought a 73 Gibson SG when I was about 17, maybe, and I stripped it and refinished it and then ended up just getting rid of it. But those are great guitars. They're amazing.
Oh, first cassette I bought, Crocus's Headhunter. Just hit me.
That's a great one. That's a great
it
album.
It is. That is it's a stellar album, and one that a lot of hard rock fans tend to kind of forget how good that one is until they put it on, of course. But, yeah, Mark Strachey,
my first 45 was Blood Rock DOA.
Nice.
Oh.
I figured your first purchases were on
white. It was a Victrola, too.
Victrola. I thought it'd be wax cylinder for you, Daniel.
Well, it may have been cylinder.
You know, I did get a wax cylinder from Mo, you know, when he was playing and stuff, but you know.
Yeah. Good God. Oh God. Too funny. Oh man. Well,
but,
Pete, I do want to get
the,
I do want to get a little bit. Oh, go ahead, Daniel.
The first album that I bought was Bad Company.
Ooh,
the first one.
Yeah.
That's a great album.
Yeah.
Because the first,
oh, yeah.
The first album that was given to me was Steppenwolf.
That's a classic.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Then, you know, then Pink Floyd and that, and then. Iron Butterfly, Jefferson Starship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, you know, then I got into some really other music and everything. Wendy L. Williams. I was a big Wendy L. Williams fan with the Plasmatics.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I remember that.
Beyond the Valley, 1984 is still a huge album for me.
Yeah, that's some cool stuff. Cool stuff. But I do want to, on the topic while we're on, I do want to make sure we get it into the show. And they actually asked in the chat room, Carol Preflatish had a question about it. But working with lyrics, do you write lyrics, first of all? And then matching music to lyrics. Can you talk a little bit about that? So, because I know a lot of writers are always curious about, you know, how the words and the music come together and what do you do in that area, and if any?
You know, it really varies. It 100% varies, and it can come at me in a million different ways. First of all, when I first started playing and first started my own bands, I used to write lyrics. Like, if I wrote a song, I wrote the whole damn thing, and that's it. But as I got older, I started to lose interest in writing lyrics. So I would just write guitar and pass it off to the singer. We'd jam it out in rehearsal, and he'd make up some stuff. And it is, you know, the first two Far Cry albums, I didn't write any lyrics at all on either of those, by design. But the new Far Cry album, there's a couple songs where I actually wrote lyrics. And I've started to write more lyrics and come up with more lyrics. I don't like digging into lyrics because I kind of dig into myself, and I'm not sure I want to do that sometimes because that's a scary place to be inside my head. But a lot of times it comes to you as a vocal line. Like, you hear something in your head, like a melody, sometimes with lyrics attached, sometimes not. And I'll just grab my iPhone and stick it on a memo. And it also happens with guitar. So I may do that too, and then sometimes I put the two together. So it really, it can go either way. And then sometimes I've finished a song and I have no ideas for lyrics, so I send it to Bob in Far Cry, who is super prolific and has written a lot of the material on the new Far Cry album. You know, whether he's written just the lyrics or the lyrics and the music, he's been heavily involved. But it can go either way. We've written stuff together. He's written stuff over top of what I've sent him. You know, it goes it can go in any direction. But there are a couple songs that I actually wrote soup to nuts on this too. So
it's a
collaborative. Is there a good app that you're using when you're writing music on your phone and stuff?
I just use the voice memo feature.
Nice.
Call
nice.
Them,
sort of hum it out or something?
Yeah, I either hum it out or I just grab my guitar and just hit record and rock it into there. Who was I talking to? I think it was Denny of The Great Affairs, and we'll be talking about this if you hear my interview on Friday Night with Fry, I think next week probably. But we were talking about it. He called them memo demos, and I was like, that's perfect. That's exactly what they are, you know, because you record a voice memo, and then it's a demo for your song, and then you got all these
nice.
Demos sitting in your phone at any time. Like, if you're like, I need a new song, you just go through those, and you're like, yeah, this one resonates, let's do it. You know, so it can really... There's no formula, is I guess what I'm saying. There's no right or wrong way, and there's no way. It comes to you when it comes to you. Sometimes it doesn't come to you for a couple months at a time, and then suddenly you're inundated with, like, creative ideas, and it's just, you know.
Well,
I mean,
I didn't
know
whether there was an app out that you could actually write the notes on, you know, like you're writing words, but actually write the notes on instead. I didn't know whether there was an app for that or not.
There probably is. However, being the Neanderthal that I am, I really don't read music for guitar much. I mean, like, I kind of know where I'm at. If you ask me, what the hell chord is that? I can tell you. I'd have to figure it out, though. I do almost everything by ear for rock.
That's just the way
I've always done it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Well, you're in good company.
That's a fair answer. I mean, there's so many people out there that can't read music, but they can jam like a...
Billy
like
Sheehan, to use one example, who's an absolute monster on bass, is one that, he's all strictly pretty much by ear, unless something changed in the last few years, at least. But I know he's one that does it that way. But, yeah, just great. Yeah, that it's interesting to me as a writer, as far as the lyric process, because, you know, figure out the words that flow into the vocal melodies that have to sync with, you know, the music. And, you know, so like when I'm listening to stuff like Rush, and, you know, I think Neil Peart is a sensational lyricist, and from a writing standpoint, it's always just amazing to think about how all that kind of comes together, and, you know, finding the right words to go with the vocal melodies to fit in with the music itself. And it's a layered process. I mean, it's definitely an art. Very, very cool to hear that you're getting into lyrics a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm trying to get more into everything. I mean, I've tried to, you know, just really kind of up my game, because I'm like, I don't, you know, it's not like I'm super young and I love music, and I wasted enough time with, you know, wrestling with self-doubt and, all kinds of other distractions that you just don't need if you're trying to be a musician.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, what am I waiting for? And I really had a lot of insecurity issues where I just felt like, well, I'm not as good as, you know, like a real guitarist, or my band isn't as good as like real bands. And I'm like, wait, what the hell am I talking about? You know? So, you know, you wrestle with yourself sometimes more than your outside critics.
Well, you shouldn't, because when I've been having writing sessions, there's been many times I've pulled out my Far Cry CDs, and let me tell you, they go head to head with anything else I have in my disc changer, and I have a large CD collection, as Holly can vouch for. So, you are definitely a real band and real guitar player. I promise you.
Cool. Always good to hear that.
Yeah. I'm glad we could help you on the show tonight.
Totally, 100%.
That's true. I mean, I think all creatives kind of get into that kind of vibe where you kind of question yourself, or you have self-doubt creeps in, and, you know, you wonder, you know, is my stuff, you know, does it really resonate? And I think that's natural to creative. I think that's definitely part of most all creatives I know. So yeah, that's a. I think that's a normal thing. Yeah, for sure, Pete. And you're timeless. You're not old. You're timeless.
Yep. Pete, when you're doing your music and everything, do you ever use sound effects, or do you just use the instruments to cause all the different sounds that you're making there?
I do use some effects. I mean, just but more to enhance what I already have as opposed to really trying to change it, unless I really hear some kind of wacky effect. But a lot of it I can do a lot with my fingers and with the pick angle. You know, I can achieve some interesting tones and harmonics and things like that. But I do like a little bit of stereo chorus on my sound overall, a little bit of reverb. But for the most part, I'm a pretty clean player. I don't use a whole lot of gain. And that was a long lesson for me to learn, because when I first started playing, I was like, more gain, the better. So I'd have it all the way up on the amp, then I'd have a pedal, like a super metal distortion pedal with the gain up to 10. You know, it would just sound like a lawnmower or something like that, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, I didn't know whether, like, you know, you use, like, anything like a jet engine or, you know, anything like that, you know.
A jet engine.
I've heard different music, you know, where people sit there and they use all different types of sound effects, you know, where they've gone out and recorded different things.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
and put it into the, you know, and made whole albums out of them and everything, where they're using all the, you know, what was it then?
Sampling.
Noise. Sound of Noise or something like that. It's a group back in the 80s.
Art of Noise
that they did all that type of stuff with, and you know, and it was very interesting music, you know, that they did. I didn't know whether you did any of that stuff along with all the music that you're playing with the instruments or not.
I tend not to do too much experimental stuff, just because I guess I'm not that. I'm very meat and potatoes. I mean, about the closest I get to that is you know, re-recording like an old Gary Numan song, but converting it to hard rock, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
But I don't do a lot of experimental stuff. For me, it's mainly about the stringed instrument. And you know, I'm very riff oriented. You know, I'm pretty old school, meat and potatoes, hard rock. I just always have been, and it's kind of my comfort zone. And sometimes I'll step out of it, but for the most part, I that's where I like to be. It's my happy place, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love it. I mean, because listening to you, you are a very clean player, and that's one of the main reasons I love Michael Schenker, because he's, you know, I love clean players, because you can hear the notes just distinctly, and it's just yeah, I love it. So I mean, yeah, that's that's a good thing for sure. Yeah, because some of these guys, I mean, yeah, they do overdo it, I think, on the tones and whatnot. Sometimes you get a gem, like Chris Holmes from Wasp, who I think has one of the greatest guitar sounds ever. But yeah, that not always doesn't always work out that way when you play around a lot with the tones and all. But man, it is cool though, and sometimes it does work. But yeah, man. Going forward here just a little bit, I do want to get a little bit in about your folks that might be within range of South Philly, but you have a pretty badass place that Holly and I have been dreaming of visiting called Taproom 19. And yeah, we definitely want to come and evaluate your stock of bourbon there, even though you're known as a craft beer establishment, and the pictures of your food just totally gets Holly and I hungry on many a day when you post those pics. Just want you to know that. Yeah, so it's your fault. Yeah, that we get hungry in the middle of the day when you post a new pic of something you're serving down there. But yeah, that's a
is that
you did
that
a few years ago. Yeah. But I want to you go ahead and talk about Taproom 19, and I hope that right now catches you in a pretty good place for your business, because I know restaurants around here have gone through a nightmare in Kentucky business-wise with the COVID shutdown stuff.
we're kind of stumbling through it. I mean, I won't say we're stumbling through it. We're wading through it because we know where we're going. Mm-hmm. So stumbling indicates that we're not sure what's going on, but we know what's going on. And basically, you know, right out of the gate, all we could do is take out. So we did that. Then they allowed us to do takeout cocktails, which we didn't think would help, but was surprisingly successful because apparently people want pre-made fresh cocktails, and we would just make batches of really fresh cocktails, fresh juice, and that helped us a little bit more. And then they allowed the outside dining, and that helped just a little bit more. And we had a really, all things considered, a pretty decent summer weather-wise. It wasn't, you know, total rain. It wasn't 106 degrees every day. So we did pretty all right with that. And we just started, Philly just started indoor dining yesterday. So we're allowed to do 25% capacity, which really is pretty much nothing. We're a small corner bar, so that's not a lot of people. But the rumor is that on the 21st, they'll increase that to 50% capacity, and that we can actually probably get through the because fall and winter, fall especially, is pretty hot for us because there's football, there's all kinds of stuff. Once the year turns, then, you know, winter's a little bit lean, spring is great again, summer's a little bit lean because we're in a residential neighborhood. So we're kind of getting through. And that, again, is Taproom on 19th, and I'll plug the website. It's taproomon19th.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. It's all Taproom on 19th, TAPROOMON19TH. So,
Holly and I are going to – we're going to find a way to get there. I promise we will. And when we do, you're probably going
to
think of
–
How many seats do you have, and how many people?
It's about 60 inside total, and then outside we have tables enough for 20 or 30.
Nice.
You know, we can do okay.
So you're down to 12 people inside right now, basically?
Essentially, yeah. That's pretty much it. Yeah, 12 to 15.
Yeah. Having one server inside.
Right.
That's,
and it's
a restaurant can't sustain on that. So, you know.
Exactly. It's just enough to say, hey, we let you guys open, but not enough for us to actually pay the bills. So.
Yeah. They did the same thing in Nashville, and now the mayor is wanting to shut down Lower Broad and then close down where nobody can be open after 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
They're doing a lot
on the weekends.
That's a mess.
You know, you think about it, on the weekends in Lower Broad, Nashville, with all the honky tonks and everything, when do they make all their money?
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's
going to
be after 10 o'clock. Yeah.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And they've already got, you know, they've already got them shut down on how many people they can let in to start with, how many people they can have on stage if they've got a stage in there, how many, you know, you know, everything like that. And then, you know, they slapped them with a 34.8% tax increase too.
That ain't bad to me. It's just like, it's like, why would you, it's like you're shutting down something that Nashville is known for. You're potentially destroying it for a really long time. You know,
it's crazy.
I already know several places that have shut down and they're not going to be able to reopen.
Right.
Oh, same here in Lexington. All over Lexington. Yeah, we've seen it too.
Yeah, it's happening here too.
But, Pete, I do have a positive. Your business is going up because Carl just said he is going to be coming to Taproom on 19th for an IPA. He lives in upstate New York, so he can reach you. He's not that far away. So if you see a Dave Grohl-looking guy walking in, charge him double. Check his ID carefully.
Absolutely.
Give him the Zimmer discount, 50% extra.
I would never do that. especially beers and IPAs. It's near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, he wants to know
give,
if you have,
give him,
I hope I pronounce it
give
right.
Give him the Daniel Dark
Troegs?
Lexington
Trogues?
Discount.
Yeah. Throw food on him.
Right. Yeah, throw some mustard on him. Yeah, that's what happens to
Daniel. Here, he gets
to Lexington.
They
throw mustard on him. I'm not kidding you. But it's Trogues. Is that pronounced right? He went at
Trogues.
Carl
Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Trogues, yeah. Yeah, he wanted to know if you had Trogues, and he said he will sing you a Foo Fighters song if you can hook him up with Trogues.
Oh my God!
There you go.
Well, if I know he's coming down, I'll make sure we have Trogues because we have quite a variety, and it rotates a lot. So.
Lexington's a craft beer town, so I know, folks here would be very, very versed in all the stuff you have there. I don't know how to speak the language as well. I love several beers. I definitely love wine and beer also, but, the area where I can talk the talk a little bit more is once you get into the bourbon whiskey area. That's my turf, I guess.
I'm a wine guy. Just give me wine. I'm
except
good.
Except yeah. for when he involves me in it, and then he can't talk anymore.
Right.
Because it's whiskey,
right.
Then he involves Daniel's whiskey.
In there,
Tennessee whiskey, charcoal filtered. But what were you gonna say, Pete? About I think you were talking.
I was gonna say that right before all this pandemic stuff started, we had just we kept building up this huge quantity of a huge variety of different whiskeys, American whiskeys and ryes and bourbons and that sort of thing, to the point where we have a bourbon book, or we actually have a whiskey book with different whites you can get and all kinds. Because we're really into, it's mainly my bar manager Brian. He is like the king of American whiskey, and he loves that stuff. So he'll be like, hey, can we get a bottle of this? Can we get a bottle of that? So we just kept building up this set, and you could do like a cheap flight for $9 or $10 up to like three different varieties of Whistle Pig for $60 or $80 or something of that name.
Nice,
so
man.
We've got some really quality stuff.
You want to learn Holly and myself
going.
There. Yeah, you are trying to bring Holly and I here.
That you're doing? Mm-hmm. How many glasses is a flight? How many glasses is a flight?
It's generally three, and they'd be a 1 ounce pour. So you're looking at 3 ounces of whiskey, which is basically like a couple shots worth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
Nice, good man. I have so many mental images of your place, hearing about it all the time on online and things like that. But I cannot wait to be there in person. Yeah, that's gonna be fantastic.
Yeah.
Get there. Tap room on 19th, South Philadelphia. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, man.
I don't remember where I was at, but their flight was 12 glasses.
Wow.
Holy moly.
That's definitely a flight.
That
a flight
sounds like
to,
a Holly wine night to me.
Yeah. That sounds like a space flight.
It was basically micro pours of 12 different and they
would
had
this
three
be
different
books and bourbon. This is books and bourbon at Imaginarium.
But they had three different levels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One level was like it was like $60. The next one was like $80, and the top one was $300-something.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
But
you're getting
micro pours of things like Rip Van Winkle and stuff like that, Pappy Van Winkle
right.
Pappy Van Winkle,
those type of things that you're getting in that top tier one that
Nice.
If you've never had a chance to drink any of that stuff and you've always wanted to try it, it was a great thing to do and everything. But it was still only, like five shots.
Right.
Is what
it's
you're
not
getting.
Right.
Yeah, because it's not
that's
like
awesome.
Full big glasses. That's got like four finger pours.
No.
Stephen pour is four to five fingers.
Yeah, you will love my pours, Pete. You will love the Steven Zimmer bourbon pour. It is a gem. I promise you. You will appreciate it for sure.
His highball glass is 8 inches tall.
not quite that bad, but no, I do enjoy bourbon. I do, but I do have to ask the $1 million question, because I'm sure if Tim Swift is listening to this tonight, he will definitely castigate me if I don't ask this. But when are you gonna launch pedal to the metal apparel? it's gotta happen. Pete, and I'll give folks the background. Pete is known for wearing a very flamboyant, flowery kind of shirts when he does live shows. Very distinctive, and it's become a thing that some of our fans of his, like myself and Tim, have noticed. And we came up with the moniker "Pedal to the Metal," P-E-T-A-L, pedal like a flower petal to the metal. Hard rock and metal, pedal to the metal apparel. And I do have to credit Tim Swift for coining that phrase, because that was awesome the day we came up with that. And but yeah, when is the apparel going to be launched, Pete? The Pete Fry pedal to the metal apparel.
I'm waiting
fans
for the
investors
want to know. To start calling.
Investors. Also, if I could sell more books, man, I'd definitely step forward, man. The book market sucks right now, unfortunately.
Well, a lot of markets are really sucking. I mean, obviously, yeah. The music market has sucked for years. Nobody's buying music anymore. I mean, people are, but not in the quantity that they were. And you can sell vinyl, but vinyl is so expensive to make. You're really just not making money on it. You know, you're just kind of breaking even if you're lucky. I mean, that's the whole thing with a lot of, you know, your industry and my industry. It's, you know, as a creative in that industry, you know, when you're setting your sights on the brass ring of like actually not losing money, that's a good day in the industry. And it should be better than that, I think, but it's just not right now. So.
No, I agree.
Sure.
Yeah, it's definitely. But you did mention vinyl again, Pete. It's got to happen, at least one release on vinyl, because I've got to have some Pete Fry vinyl in my collection. That's something that's been nagging at me for years.
The plan is for the new album to be released on vinyl. I think that there's a very strong likelihood of that. So,
well, I promise
and it's got
you,
a good
I
cover, so.
Day one buyer, I promise you. Day one buyer of the vinyl. Well, I'll be, you know me, Pete. I'll be day one buyer of the CD too, of course. but yeah. Count. So actually, out of me, you're going to get at least two sales. Holly, you'll probably dive in and get an extra copy. So yeah, in our household alone, you'll have at least three sales. And if the cats get a hold of the credit card, you never know. It might be more than that.
You never do. Perfect.
But
winning.
That's awesome.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's right. God, I'm having so much fun tonight with you, man. This is just stellar. I mean, this is just an absolutely enjoyable night, man. Finally, we finally got to visit with you on a Zoom chat recently, and that was awesome. And but yeah, it's just great to just hang out with you and talk music and talk you know, your projects and talk about the, you know, Tap Room on 19th and yeah, just awesome. And,
it's,
you know, definitely
pleasure,
razz you a little bit with, you know, stuff like pedal to the metal. Of course, we got it. Yeah. Tim would never let me hear the end of it if I didn't at least mention it on the show, I'm sure. But man, I have not caught up with him in a while, and I actually need to do that. It's been a little bit since I talked to the man. He's a cool lad for sure. But we're coming up at about
being an ex-restaurant person myself. What drew you into opening up a restaurant?
You know, it's interesting. I'd worked corporate for a long time. In fact, my first full-time job was my last full-time job. And I worked my way from being, you know, packing boxes in the warehouse to a partner in the company and director of operations. and we bought out our department from the parent company and made a go of it as a partnership. But my boss was the 55% owner, and the rest of us didn't add up enough to be a majority, which didn't seem like a problem because I'd worked for the guy for about 25 years or so. But it just got, it got really weird, and it just got really unpleasant, and it just wasn't a good thing, and I knew I had to get out. One day I came home, and my wife said, I don't care what you do, but you can't do this anymore, because I was, like, ready to kill people. Not literally, because that's just not my thing, but, you know, I was not happy at all. And she said, why don't you open up a bar with your friend Mike? So Mike and I opened up a bar. And Mike has since gone on to open up. I'll just give him a brief plug because he's a great guy. And he's
absolutely
an amazing cook. Mike's Barbecue in South Philly is the shit. And you can read about it in Bon Appetit, Food and Wine. He's huge. He's done great. And I bought out his interest in Tap Room on 19th recently. So I'm the owner of that. But he is killing it with Mike's Barbecue.
Nice.
I mean, like, if you look up Mike's Barbecue Philly, you'll find a ton of stuff. He's hot. He's, like, super. Even with the pandemic, he's hot.
Well, Holly's a big foodie, and she follows chefs and everything, so I know she'll be on this as soon as the show is over. And then this means that, yeah, you are actually planning our itinerary when we come to Philadelphia, because, of course, we're going to be at Tap Room on 19th every day, but we may have to get a meal at another establishment, you know, once in a while, maybe for the lunch or something. You know, if we come to see you every day while we're there, that's, you know, I hope you don't get too disappointed, but
not at
we'll
all.
Have
plus,
to fit it.
He doesn't have a liquor license. So if you want something to drink, you still got to talk to me.
That's
you go.
Well, we will.
And
I'll be the guy in the corner
and
with bourbon glass.
One of the things that you'll have to have is a true Philly steak sandwich.
Oh God!
Yeah,
of course.
We do a solid Philly cheesesteak, and I would put it up against any of the big ones. It's a solid cheesesteak. We do a nice job, and we make our own, like Cooper Sharp Whiz. Cooper Sharp being kind of a local sharp cheddar process thing that we make Whiz out of. It's a thing. It's really good. Mm-hmm. I gotta say, you know, food snob or no?
Oh yeah.
The cheesesteaks are a pretty good thing, you know, and there's a lot of
really
good ones.
I have seen the pictures, folks. I have seen your photos. Yes, I have. And I know, Holly, I know you've seen the photos because we talk about them when Pete puts them up. Yeah, so it's that's awesome. That is awesome. And we're coming up about 3 minutes left in the live show. If we do go over a couple minutes, that's okay. But we want to make sure of one thing for sure in the live show portion is that you get out any links or social media contacts for the public to follow you, your bands, anything you want.
Okay. Well, you can reach Far Cry at facebook.com/Far Cry Band, FarCryBand. Jaded Past can also be found on Facebook, as can Hit and Run. I think Hit and Run is HITNRUN 1991, if I'm not mistaken. But they're on Facebook as well. Blonde Viper is, you know, Blonde Viper, BLONDVIPER. I think that's everybody that I'm playing with right now. So that's where you can get that. Tap Room 119, obviously, TapRoomOn19th.com. We are also on Facebook, Instagram. Friday Night with Fry is facebook.com/groups/FRYDAY with Fry, all one word. You know, hit me up anywhere. And my personal page is it's Blue Charvel, BlueCharvel. And hit me up, friend me. I got a few spaces left. Be more than happy to talk to you.
Awesome, man. Thank you. And you too, folks, can be part of the Saturday Madness when Pete puts up the request thread for Friday Night with Fry and watch it go in 10 minutes, you know, every week.
Yeah, you got to be quick, man. You got
to
be quick.
Be quick.
Sometimes it's 10 minutes, and other times it's like 3 hours. You just never know. And so it's almost always seems like I get the 9 requests, and then nobody puts in the last request for like an hour. I'm like, come on. Yeah. I want to close it down.
I love your notes on that. You're like, all right, one more to go. One more to go. Yeah, that's awesome.
And then
what's up, Pete?
I was just gonna say, invariably when I do that, I get 2 at the same time, and I'm like,
oh yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah, I try not to get into it every week because I'm usually writing on Saturdays and stuff. And sometimes I'll have my notification thing on, and because I do want to, you know, sometimes I do want to definitely get a request in. I try not to do it all the time because obviously you want to have a variety of people every week and get different folks a chance to make requests. But it is fun, the frenzy that occurs when you post that thread. It is kind
of
fun. And
or you'll come out of writing and I'll be like, I got in there. Yeah. You missed Pete. In there.
Yep. I got in this week. I did make the cut this week, and so I'm looking forward. I made a great band. I mentioned him earlier in the show, Dino Jelusic, but Animal Drive, Fade Away, which I think is just an amazing song, and definitely is one that most people probably don't even know exists, but I hope you enjoyed that one at least, Pete.
I enjoy most of them. I will say that. I did.
Cool. Yeah. As you probably could tell, I'm on my Dino Jelusic addiction because of course I'm a big Jorn Land and big Ray Gillen fan. So obviously, when I heard him, I was like, oh my God, I was like, had to get everything I could of his, But getting back to the request thread, that is a fun thing for sure, and definitely a kind of like a piranha frenzy usually occurs when you post that up there. But it's fun, folks.
Hey, Steven, considering he's got a restaurant, send him a copy of my book.
I will. Oh. I will. You're a winner, Pete. You just won a prize. You didn't even know it was a contest. But yeah.
Sweet.
What it is Victorian catsup, and Daniel is a chef, and he used to have a Victorian bistro. And so what this book has is a ton of Victorian-era catsup recipes, authentic ones, that Daniel collected.
Really cool.
And there's a big story behind it where Daniel was recovering from a stroke, and the catsup book was a big part of that recovery process. So it's a great book and unique, and the catsups are definitely, it's amazing.
Yep.
I mean, the different
there's
varieties
catsup,
and stuff in there.
Spicy catsup,
yeah.
There's, fruit catsup.
Yeah.
I mean, it tells the history of catsup. Yeah, it's neat.
And I've got your address.
Actually, really great.
Because during the pandemic mess, I shipped you some reading material with my name on it. So I do think I've got your address on file because I sent you some books. So I do know I got your address somewhere. But I'll make sure that I get you a copy of that because I think, you really enjoy it, Pete.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you might even be able to incorporate some of that.
I did get your package, and I wish I had more time to read. I did start one of the books, and then I just got sidetracked, but they're sitting next to my bed, so at some point I will definitely get to them. I'm really bad. I used to read so much more, and I'm just doing way too much stuff all at once these days. But
we get it.
But I will
understand. We understand. I've actually had to make a concerted effort myself to carve out reading time. I had to make a willful, conscious effort just to make reading time because I was getting so, spread, with all the activity we do, writing,
we also edit.
Conventions,
we edit,
presses,
so
and all this,
we read.
And work as a freelance editor and edit for the press. And
we're editing and doing all this too. So it's hard to, make time. It's like, okay, we're going to read now.
it really is that bad. But I will make sure you get a copy of that because you actually might have a few things from that book to pull from further use in your Taproom on 19th establishment.
Yeah.
So
I'll
get that to you.
I used to make different ketchups for different dishes that I was putting out. If I had a special dish that I was putting out, I'd put out a special ketchup to go along with it. And
cool.
Yep. So, yeah, we need to get Daniel up there. We'll have to make it maybe we'll bring Gentleman Cigars on a trip to South Philly and just play it all full circle. Now I'm getting a vision now. We may have to make this happen here. But Pete, I don't want to keep you. I know you got a million things going on, obviously, from you've discussed in the show. Everybody has heard that already, so I don't want to keep you too long. But I do want to give you a chance to bring up anything that you think we have not covered tonight that you would like to talk about, because I want to make sure that you get a comprehensive visit, my friend.
I think you got everything. I gave you all my websites and everything like that. I mean, I think you got everything.
your mother's maiden name, your social security number, your first
right.
name of your first pet.
Yeah.
Your firstborn, all that.
I'm going to post that on my Facebook page so everybody can get it.
Nice.
Oh, there you go.
But in all seriousness, folks, Far Cry, F-A-R-C-R-Y, as Pete said, please, folks, if you like Melodic Hard Rock, just really well-written, just well-played, good, solid as a rock musicianship. I mean, they've got two albums out, but this I am so looking forward to this third album and can't wait till, you've got the distribution and everything set. But definitely, folks, check this stuff out. I mean, it is world class, and you're going to hear some amazing things off this album. I did have the privilege of hearing some of the early demo versions, and it was enough to get me salivating for a vinyl CD release. That's for sure.
Cool.
I'm sorry, but I've got a memory like a bear trap. As long as it catches right in the jaws, it's all right. But if it's anywhere else around the bear trap, I don't get it. What was the name of the song that you said that you could find on YouTube right now?
Oh, Jaded Past, Spy by Love. That's probably the most recent thing that's come out.
Spy by Love.
Mm-hmm.
Jaded Past, Spy by Love. And I believe the Blonde Viper Project just released their first single, which is called Soundtrack of My Life. And that's Blonde Viper, Soundtrack of My Life. Those are the two brand new things that you can get a hold of that I play on right now. Neither one
Excellent.
Is really my project, but they're things that I play lead guitar on, and I have a lot of fun with it. So it's good stuff.
Well,
I enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, if you're happy with
black,
it, I know
black,
it's good.
Black
so,
cover
yeah.
with guys sitting on the cover, right?
Yeah, I think that is. Yeah, that sounds like the Jaded Past one.
Nice. Yeah, Daniel's already hunting it down on the air here. Very cool.
Cool.
So, Pete, thank you, my friend. And I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to sign off, and then I'll let you say your good night and any other closing message you'd like. Oh.
I think he's jamming.
Daniel, are you jamming already? I think Daniel's already called it up there, but I'll go ahead and close
it up. I'm waiting for
nice.
It. So.
Nice, but I'll go ahead and close out. But then Pete, you go ahead and tell everybody your final message, and then Holly and Daniel, you guys can take us out for tonight. But this is Steven Zimmer, and had a great evening, and this has just been a blast with Pete Fry. And folks, check in with us every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern for a exploration of the creative world with great featured guests such as Pete Fry. So talk to you next week at about the same time, and we will have the Imaginarium convention preview this coming Wednesday next week. And night, everybody. Take care, and that's me signing off.
Have a good night, guys. Thanks so much.
Have a good night, and check us out again Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern, next week as we talk about everything Imaginarium. Night.
And this is the Dark One, Daniel Dark. You got to listen to Pete Fry tonight and learn a lot about what creatives are all about and what they do to get there. If you enjoyed tonight's show, do not miss next week, because we're going to be talking about Imaginarium and talking about your future. Daniel Dark, good night.